This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 15th of April 2022. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 15th of April, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And John Parvin.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: plan dropped for huge solar farm, demolition plan labelled crazy, and councillor gives latest update on leisure centre. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which was plan dropped for huge solar farm. Developers have scrapped plans for a major and strongly contested solar farm near Alsford, writes Toby Oliver. Godsfield Solar Farm, planned for farmland off Godsfield Lane, was one of the most controversial applications in recent years. The site was going to be on 54 acres, generating enough power for 3,000 homes. The plan divided opinion of groups and individuals across Winchester, with over 600 objections and 170 supporters. Groups such as British Horse Society, Byton Parish Council and the Alsford Society sent in objections. Alan Titchmarsh, former Chancellor of Winchester University, added his objection, saying the site was totally inappropriate. But Winchester Action on the Climate Crisis, WINAC, was among supporters of the plan. At the time of writing, there are no new documents about the plan on Winchester City Council's planning portal. However, the developer, Anesco, confirmed to the Chronicle that the application had been withdrawn. A spokesman said, "Anesco has withdrawn its application for a solar farm at Godsfield. This is a result of technical challenges relating to land use and the grid connection rather than any planning-related issues. We are now in the process of finding an alternative location to site the development." The proposal's objections were due to the remoteness of the area and that it would have intruded on a 60-mile footpath from Winchester to Windsor. Reacting to the plan's withdrawal, WINAC member Bill Gunyon said WINAC is disappointed that the Godsfield solar farm plans have been withdrawn. "Recent chaos in energy markets highlights how urgently the UK needs low-cost, local generation of clean electricity." Dave Ram, Open Spaces Society, local correspondent for Hampshire, said, "From a country lover's point of view, I hope they don't find any other locations suitable either. Talk about saving the planet by destroying what we've got, bit by bit. Without any opportunity for an alternative route, the Three Castles path would have been seriously degraded. But I'm sure the vast majority of the nearly 1,000 who submitted comments will now be very pleased to hear that this latest proposal has finally been abandoned. It is now 30 years since this long-distance path from Windsor to Winchester was first published, so I've arranged to walk this path during the first week in May and see everything, including the bluebells, once again." Jan Field, chairman of the Alsford Society, said that this was a good result for that site and that the new location should not be next to an important long-distance footpath through lovely countryside. The developer was unable to give details of the new location at this time.
Demolition plan labelled crazy. Plans to demolish a house that was only built 4 years ago to make way for a larger development have been labelled crazy by councillors. More than 70 people objected to plans for the development of the site in Springvale Road, Kingsworthy. However, the permission for the demolition has been granted under the permitted development rights. Developers for Tudor want to redevelop the site to provide 20 new houses on the land behind it. However, a planning application for this has yet to be submitted or decided. Now councillors are calling on the developer to not to flatten the house. Councillor Jackie Porter, one of the three councillors who represent the Worthies ward on Winchester City Council, said, I am completely appalled that this has been allowed under the planning rules. This developer has not been honest with our community. Their plans will destroy the integrity of a row of homes on Springvale Road that were loved from the moment they were built. She labelled the demolition plan a crazy and abhorrent solution. Councillor Steve Cramerson, ward councillor for the Worthies, said, "Whilst amending the main proposals for the development, for which there are over 70 objections on the City Council website, the developer has put in a fast-track application for prior approval for demolition under a completely separate application, which is not subject to the same scrutiny as normal applications and cannot be objected to in the normal way." Councillor Jane Rutter, also a ward councillor for the Worthies, added, "Having declared a climate emergency, the very last thing we should be doing is demolishing a house that was built just 4 years ago." Among the public comments was a neutral one from a former city councillor, Ian Tate. He said, "This scheme is looking to maximise the build form, and I feel that this approach is one to be commended. However, it is essential that any scheme is designed to create a welcoming environment. I think that there is merit in many aspects of this application, however. It does look as though there are some weak points which need addressing before the scheme can be considered acceptable." Richard Carr, COE of the Fortudo, said demolition was necessary. He said there is a shortage of homes all over the UK. Demolishing one home to create 20 more makes perfect sense. We pride ourselves in creating modern family homes. The demand for homes for young families is increasing all the time.
Councillor gives latest update on leisure centre. A public consultation will take place this summer to help develop the site at the Old River Park Leisure Centre. In March, Winchester City Council approved the disposal of the site, including the skate park and bowls club, on a 150-year lease to Southampton University. The university wants to expand its School of Art campus on Park Avenue, as well as developing the former North Walls police station site. This was met by chaotic scenes at Winchester Guildhall as protesters tried to enter the building. In an online forum, Councillor John Tippett Cooper explained the next steps of the process. Councillor Tippett Cooper said, "The playing fields, the play area and the open green space of River Park remain fully protected. These are not being leased or sold and remain fully protected as open space. The agreement only includes the footprint of the old leisure centre building, part of the car park, the indoor bowls club and the skate park. The only green spaces included in the area to be leased are some small grass verges next to the water. The public will still be able to walk through the River Park site. The university wants to include the old leisure centre site to build an attractive building that will include community facilities such as performance and exhibition space, library facilities and a cafe, all part of a multi-million pound investment in Winchester." Councillor Tippett Cooper also provided details about the public consultation. He said the University of Southampton now has 5 years to develop a plan for the site and go through the planning process before a formal lease is entered into. They will launch a public consultation process in the summer to help design the site. We expect there will be lots of opportunities for the public to comment on and provide their views on the university's plans before any spade enters the ground. We have also been working with the university to get agreement to establishing a residence forum where you will be able to meet with them and discuss the proposal directly. We expect those meetings to start shortly.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. And excuse me. Now we continue with the death announcements and Christian comment, letters, chronicle comment, first person and Belgarum. So we start with the death announcements this week. Clegg, Audrey Beatrice Clegg, died peacefully on the 4th of April, aged 97. Cook, Mary Ellen Cook, died peacefully on the 7th of April. Folds, Margaret Folds, died on the 3rd of April, aged 85. Hampton, Shirley Jean Hampton, died on the 31st of March, aged 97. Hosey, Brenda Jean Hosey, who died on the 28th of March after a short illness, aged 86. Jaff, Penelope Faye Jaff, died peacefully on the 1st of April, aged 89. Macy, Roger George Macy, died on the 3rd of April, aged 86. And Waters, Marguerite Waters, known as Rita, who died peacefully on the 30th of March, aged 84. John, now I think we've got a Christian comment.
Indeed. Bruised for our iniquities. Last week I spent a few days in hospital. Being monitored meant I was wired up to this and that, not able to roam about or care for myself properly. I found it difficult at first, but soon learnt that the best way to cope with being in hospital is just to give in to the strange patient day and the requirements constraints. Being dependent and compliant is not easy, though, and going along with it took some getting used to. But I was content in the end and had a good outcome in the hands of very caring and kind people. It set me thinking about Jesus and this Holy Week we have just entered. On Sunday, we remembered him riding into Jerusalem in triumph. Did you see the donkey going down the high street? With people shouting his name and waving palms. What a wonderful feeling being lauded and cheered. But he knew what was about to happen. Far from being in the hands of good and caring people, he was being thrown at the mercy of some extraordinarily cruel and brutal people who were going to give him a tortuous end. Unlike me, he was humble and compliant. He went with it, he knew it was futile to resist, and that anything he said was unlikely to change the outcome. He knew he would be betrayed, have a show trial, and be put to death for preaching kindness and goodness. Rather than resisting or running away, he became meek and humble. He wasn't weak because he knew that he was about to be offered as a sacrifice that would bring us all closer to God. In Isaiah, we are told he was wounded for our transgressions, bruised for our iniquities, and by his stripes we are healed. This, then, is what we Christians are thinking about this week, the last days of Jesus. Then on Sunday, we celebrate his resurrection and overcoming of death, opening the doors of heaven for all who believe. Jesus' story is a long way from my hospital stay that was intended for good and healing purposes, and it did achieve that end. Jesus' week was intended to get rid of him as a problem to the worldly power and strength of the authorities. However, their plan didn't work, because they did not believe in his being the Messiah, and he had no idea that they could not put out the light of God, no matter what they did. So, sometimes we have to choose our battles and look beyond the immediate to what might be intended or planned as a good outcome. Jesus saw far beyond anything any of us would have seen under such terrible duress, and we have a friend and God who knows all about pain and suffering, and is available just a small prayer away. This Easter, then, remember his pain and then his triumph and rejoice, because death cannot hold us, but only release us into God's presence.
Thank you, John. And now we're going to move on to letters to the editor. Nikki, you got the first, I think.
And that's from Nick Dennis, headed "In Writing, Please." Councillor Paula Ferguson is quoted in your March 17th edition on the University of Southampton's plans for the River Park site. Quotes, "This will be an incredible zero-carbon building that is open, that will have a performance space, exhibition space and cafe where people can sit, where people can meet, where they can read and display some of the city's rich history. It is difficult for people to see that now." As far as I know, there are no detailed plans or legally binding undertakings to back up these predictions. If Councillor Ferguson has access to such, she could greatly improve the Cabinet's position by publishing them. And that from Nick Dennis, Worthy Lane, Hyde.
Lido resonance. I've just read in The Guardian the obituary of the artist called Brian Barnes, not a household name, but he was awarded the MBE in 2006 for services to Battersea community. He was a muralist and a social campaigner. My interest in him is because he painted the Nuclear Dawn mural in Brixton on a building that I was asked to try and save when Lambeth, the self-styled cooperative council, wanted to flatten the area to create a new arts-led complex. The irony was that the building in question was full of live workspaces for artists. Happily, the building and the mural were spared, but not before the artist had been kicked out. The obituary shows a detail from an earlier mural, The Good, the Bad and the Ugly, painted in 1976-78 with the help of 90 volunteers near Battersea Bridge. The wall was demolished a year later, despite protesters in their thousands. Brian Barnes was arrested. The mural shows, besides cyclists, a route master bus and some handsome Victorian gables, that was clearly an open-air swimming pool. Anyone who has been following the various redevelopment sagas in the Winchester, including the increased anti-graffiti police patrols, will see the resonance. And that was from Judith Martin of Romsey Road, Winchester.
Time to tighten the tax rules. There has already been comment in the national press on Rishi Sunak's generous donation to Winchester College, followed by extensive coverage of his family's tax arrangements. Entertaining as revelations of non-dom status and green cards are, much of the outrage is missing the point. Endless pontification on questions of morals, ethics, or declarations of interest simply diverts attention from the essential issue, namely our flawed tax system, which not only legitimises but facilitates practices designed to keep the country's wealth created by working people in the hands of a privileged few. Apart from tax reform, the criteria for qualifying as charity with beneficial tax rates and rate relief also needs to be tightened up. Public schools, private healthcare providers, etc., which charge large fees for the services they provide, and in the case of Winchester College, also profit from having land and property portfolios, are businesses and should be treated the same as any other commercial organisation. And this is by Karen Barrett of Byron Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
And this from Margaret Grant, headed Sheriff and Ward. Reading Phil Yates' letter brings back more memories. Chronicle March the 10th. My first job after leaving Denmark School in the 1950s was at Sheriff and Ward's as a trainee window dresser working under Mr. Cooper's tuition. In those days, the windows were filled with goods that all the many different departments had to offer. These areas were either side of the double entrance doors, reached by going round the back of a central display island. You could be sure a customer always wanted to see, feel or buy the last item of a colour or size in these tight spots. Sliding inside the large glass windows over other goods for the customer's choice was one of my jobs. Hopefully, no other item got broken or fell over. No elf and safety in them days. Some display signs and backdrops were handmade and painted in an old Sheriff and Ward stable over in Colebrook Street, as well as paint pots, brushes and previous creations for future upcycling. It was bitterly cold in the winter, with its cobbled floors, stalls and a small grate for keeping the horses and carter warm in its past life. In those days, the store had a manager who walked the shop floor, keeping an eye on staff, customers and trade. He did not carry a phone or sit in his office. We were all kept on our toes, that's for sure. Many of the staff were related, so teamwork was essential to benefit everyone connected to the business and the customers, of course. So once again, I say many more memories of changes to departments, positions and names that are still there in the old grey matter. Just look into yours. And that's from Margaret Grant, Berriton Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
Cuts to services. Hampshire County Council's recent consultation on proposals to stop funding three adult social care grant schemes worth £320,000 has closed, as the council now considers the many responses sent in by the public. We urge them to reconsider the proposals. The cuts will mean that Hampshire's growing older population are at risk of losing vital services like those provided by MHA communities, Good Neighbours Network and Age Concern Hampshire. These services include a wealth of activities that cater directly to older people's needs. We understand the need for councils across the board to make savings due to the pressures, including national funding cuts, but feel that the benefits of the services like these more than justify the continuation of these grants. If scrapped, it could increase the cost to both the council and local health services, which in the long run could cost more than it saves. Our concern is that many older people across Hampshire will be left without the support they need, causing them to lean on GPs and the council for day-to-day inquiries, which local surgeries and council officers may not have time to resource. We urge the council to listen to the many people who have responded to the consultation and can reconsider the cuts to these vital grants. We ask this not for the organisations who provide the services, but for the older people of Hampshire. No savings made will outweigh the benefits of these services or cover the gaps they fill. And that's from ORGS, which is made up of various Winchester organisations.
Empty centre. Containers make homes for refugees, and more city children live in poverty. I see these and other headlines in the Hampshire Chronicle, and yet every day walk past the large, unused and seemingly abandoned Kingsworthy Day Care Centre, council-owned, empty for a number of years. There is something wrong that we can afford the luxury of these empty places, yet be unable to house our own homeless, asylum seekers and refugees. Are we waiting for the centre to reach such a state of dilapidation that there is only one option, to sell to developers? I would suggest that in these times where we are all having to take a moral stand on our world view, the moral case is the easier one to make. And this is by Daisy Hamblin, School Lane, Headbourne Worthy.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. Now we've got the editorial comment, Nikki, please.
And we're back to this knocked-down house, headed Crazy Plan to Knock Down Modern Home. A developer has secured permission to knock down a house in Kingsworthy that is only 4 years old. The story is on page 2. 40 Tudor, based in Bournemouth, is able to exploit permitted development rights without the application going before a planning committee of city councillors. From 40 Tudor's point of view, the proposal makes sense, as the demolition will create access to a large space behind the house and enable it to apply to build 20 houses. But it is hard to disagree with local councillors who have criticised the scheme as crazy. This is an appalling waste of resources in demolishing a building that is only 4 years old. 40 Tudor's boss, Richard Carr, claims, "There's a shortage of homes all over the UK. The demand for homes of young families is increasing all the time." If his houses address the real shortage in this city, it would be an argument in its favour, but most will be a size out of reach of most. 40 Tudor is in the market to make as much money as it can, but its interests are not the same as the wider public's.
Thank you. Now we have the first person, please.
And this is entitled Butlin's Fun by Kimberly Barber. Forgive me if there are any typos in this column. I have just returned from a long weekend at Butlin's in Bognor Regis and feel that if I'd been on a hen weekend. But instead of the late-night dancing and drinking of shots, there was early evening dancing under the instructions of a brightly coloured characters with cups of brightly coloured slush. The whole place was another level. My kids are 2 and 4, and at every turn there was something to catch their attention. I've rolled in soft play, been on 100 fairground rides, and seen dozens of shows, and walked what feels like miles. We stayed in the swimming pool for hours, turned into prunes, going down each ride at least 10 times each. And there were so many people. After 2 years of social distancing, 4 days of rubbing shoulders with strangers felt quite peculiar and draining. It seems that this year people are determined to enjoy themselves. Gone are the face masks, the hand sanitizer stations and empty, and there are faint impressions of where there were once signs directing you where to stand. At the entrance to each fairground ride, there are signs that say, "Be kind," with a paragraph underneath about how nationwide staff shortages in the hospitality industry have hit the park, meaning that you may need to wait longer. It urges you not to take things out on the ride attendant and instead call a telephone number. To be fair, most of the staff members were pleasant, but some appeared overworked. There was a lady in the pottery painting studio killing people's fun by telling people that the pottery could not go into the kiln. Have energy prices gone up so much at Butlin's? And instead, they were to take home straight away, when the charging extortionate prices, to slap some ordinary waterproof paint on a plain white ornament. There was a team in Burger King who were breaking all records on slow fast food, 31 minutes for a kid's meal, and then there were the poor girls on the Costa counter with a huge queue of sunken-eyed parents waiting for their caffeine fix from the one coffee machine. During our stay, I needed to speak to a member of staff about our dirty mattress and dirty chalet. After finding that both the main receptions were closed and boarded up, presumably to free up staff member to man the fairground rides or the coffee counter somewhere, I was left feeling a little miffed. When you're on holiday with two kids in tow, the last thing you want is calling a number, pressing options and waiting on hold. Luckily, after a stint working at a holiday park in Cornwall, I was prepared and I had packed a bottle of Dettol, a pack of anti-back wipes and a couple of extra blankets. These were enough to take the edge off the grimy chalet, and thankfully we were so whacked at the end of each day that it was easy to close your eyes and forget that we had paid hundreds of pounds to be sleeping on top of someone else's bodily fluids. I found the cleaners who were huddled in the equipment cupboard ignoring the steady flow of hundreds of cigarette butts on the floor and told them about our chalet. The women promised to look into it after we'd gone. I wondered how many times this season she's already had to say those words. Given that we're only in April and the season is yet to get into full swing, I fear for the state of the place come August. If you're heading there, make sure you go equipped with cleaning wipes, hand sanitizer and bleach, especially if you're in the budget accommodation. Hopefully, the management will have managed to find a few more staff to employ by the summer holidays and will have dug into their pockets a bit more to invest in some cleaning. They could start by giving the white tent a scrub. The roof has turned a greeny, slimy sludge colour. Not a great first impression as you arrive. Then you could move on to looking at the bed and if they were brave enough, underneath it. In Oyster Bay Guillemot 19. Oh. I think that says it all.
The practice of flooding the meadows. Twyford Parish Council has held its annual drowning of the ancient water meadows. The fields were flooded on March the 26th and again on March the 31st for local school children. There was much interest, with more than 150 people witnessing this special event. The flooding of this restored meadows was demonstrated on BBC recently as part of Chris Packham's walk to Winchester along the Itchen navigation, raising awareness. The same team carried out the flooding by the simple means devised by 17th century engineers, directing the flows of water into different channels by means of raising and lowering boards, all done by hand. The system is operational in about 15 minutes. The day was one of glorious sunshine, and just as shown on TV, there was the same thrill of excitement as the main hatch is opened and the water poured through. The children run along, following the flows, clearing its path, and then helping to dam one channel to flood the next. Parish Councillor Chris Corcoran, who has overseen the restoration, said the working wet water meadows show how farmers used to use their local resources to achieve huge increases in productivity. The parish council are limited to the number and timing of floodings, so the next will not be until next year, unless we can get special permission for a jubilee flooding.
Thank you. Now, this week's announcements. The first thing we should mention is that the Winchester Talking Newspaper Annual General Meeting, which we've obviously missed for a couple of years during the lockdown, will be on Sunday the 8th of May at 2:30. It's actually this time going to be here at Unit 12 in Winnall Valley Road, where we're currently recording, in one of the dance studios. And it's at Sunday the 8th of May, 2:30, and there will be refreshments. And if you would like to attend, you'd be very welcome. Lighting up time ends Friday the 15th of April at 6:11 a.m. and begins at 8:01 p.m. And on Wednesday the 20th of April, it ends at 6:01 a.m. and begins at 8:09 p.m. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone the contact number on the key fob attached to your memory stick. And now we continue with further items of general news. Nikki.
And this one headed BT pauses switch off. BT has said it will no longer be switching off analogue lines, landlines. The telecommunications provider announced plans earlier this year to switch all landline phones to digital, with the Hampshire rollout being completed by 2025. It said that digital phones would replace traditional landline handsets. However, despite campaigners raised concerns saying the plan would cause unnecessary worry for thousands of the most vulnerable customers. However, the firm has now backed down and said it is pausing its plans. A BT spokesperson said, further to recent feedback, we've taken the decision to pause the major rollout of our digital voice programme. It's clear from what some customers are telling us that we underestimated the impact this technology upgrade would have on certain customer groups. We got it wrong by going too early, and for this we're sorry. We'll aim to restart the programme once we're more confident that the right products and solutions are in place that will provide more resilient connectivity. The upgrade of the rapidly ageing analogue landline phones is a critical national industry programme that carries very important and significant long-term benefits for the UK. Digitising the UK's future is a crucial mission for the industry, and we're determined to get it right. The move has been welcomed by the Country, Land and Business Association, which represents thousands of farmers, landowners and rural businesses in Hampshire and the South.
MP reads for Talking Newspaper. Steve Brine, MP, has appeared as a guest reader on the Winchester Talking Newspaper, WTN. Steve joined a presenter and three other readers at WTN studio in Winnall Valley Road on Friday, April the 8th, and participated in the weekly reading and recording of extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle. In the afternoon, a further team copied the recording onto memory sticks and sent them to the organisation's blind or visually impaired listeners. Mr. Brine said he was very impressed with WTN's work and was pleased to be invited to the new studio, having previously appeared as a guest reader when the service was based in Chesil Street. After the recording, he said, "As our local MP, I obviously take an interest in what our local paper is up to, but also what our amazing voluntary sector is doing. The Winchester Talking Newspaper brings them both together and quite simply a brilliant service. I was so pleased to be invited to be a guest reader and thoroughly enjoyed the experience. Thank you to everyone involved for all they do." And there is a picture. And there is John Richards, Noel and Heather Thorpe Tracy and Jane Harding. Oh, and of course Steve Brine.
Appreciating the humble sparrow in our gardens. House sparrows may not be the most colourful bird in the UK or the most impressive singer, but they've long been one of our favourites because they live in such proximity to people. Their friendly faces are a common sight in many parks and gardens, chirping away from a hedgerow or happily hobbling around outdoor cafes and picnic areas, hoping to swoop in and steal any neglected scraps. House sparrows are one of the UK's most common birds. In fact, they're the third most common breeding bird, with about 5.3 million pairs. However, they are a lot rarer than they used to be. According to the State of the UK's Birds Report, since the late 1960s, we have lost around 10.7 million pairs of house sparrows. This drastic decline has earned them a place on the UK Red List for birds, which essentially flags them as species in need of urgent action. There is not one single cause behind this decline, but an accumulation of issues across different habitats. As our older buildings have been renovated and homes improved, there are fewer cracks and gaps in which sparrows can squeeze their nests. As gardens, streets and roadsides are tidied, we lose valuable habitat for the insects that house sparrows eat, an issue compounded even more by the use of pesticides. Changes to the way land is farmed are also linked to declines in rural sparrow populations. But there is hope for house sparrows, with signs of slowing declines and even slight recovery in some populations in recent years. If we can find more space for sparrows, offering them opportunities to nest and help our insect populations to recover, our hedges can once again be full of their joyful chirps. You can help them at home by leaving parts of your garden to go wild, encouraging the insects that they need to feed their young. If you have sparrows visiting, a row of nest boxes or a special house sparrow terrace near your eaves could give them a place to nest. They're gregarious birds that like to nest close to other sparrows. You can also help by supporting and getting involved with local conservation. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust initiative Team Wilder, for example, encourages everyone and anyone to take action to help create space for nature, be it in your garden, community, school, or workplace.
David swaps property deals for pulling pints. A former estate agent of more than 10 years has taken a leap of faith to save his village pub as, quotes, he couldn't bear to see it as anything other than a thriving local. David Dobson is set to relaunch the Coach and Horses in Oxford Road, Sutton Scotney, on Friday after taking on the pub with his partner, Brenda White, just 2 weeks ago. Mr. Dobson first became involved with the pub shortly after Christmas when he started helping out behind the bar a few nights a week, something to fill the evenings while it was under previous management. With the pub falling into disrepair and several issues having been raised by regulators about the state of the building, the former landlords recently decided to up sticks and walk away, leaving the village tap house in what looked like being a perilous position. Describing a whirlwind few weeks for the pair, Mr. Dobson from Hunton said, "I'd had a few people say to me, 'Well, why don't you take it on and have a go at running it? You must have picked up a few things about managing a pub.' And I think it was around a fortnight or so ago, me and my partner just decided we were going to go for it. So I gave my job up, we rallied everyone who said they'd help, worked out what everyone needed to do, and since then it has been all systems go. Now I'm getting closer to 50. This is a nice change of career and lifestyle, and it's something me and Brenda can do together and hopefully enjoy as well." Since embarking on the new venture, Mr. Dobson has been supported by several village residents who have all pitched in to help give the pub a new lease of life. He said everything needed doing. The place looked as if it had been burgled. And when the old managers left, there are 4 bedrooms upstairs, none of which you could have even opened the door to. The front sign had basically fallen off. The garden was covered in glass and cigarette butts. It was really spit and sawdust. There was an awful lot of work which needed to be done. But what's really nice is that all the locals doing it, the community all stepping in. The pub hasn't historically been run to the best it could be, so we've sat down and had a few meetings with people from the area, and from that we've had offers from tradesmen, handymen, and even people who've come and cut the grass. All those people who own a part of the pub, sorry, will own a part of the pub, even if it's just emotionally. We put our name on the door, if you like, but during this process, those who have come in have been able to suggest things which they'd like to see in their local, and even if it's little tweaks, we've worked together to make that happen. Mr. Dobson says the menu has also undergone a drastic makeover, with a shift from largely frozen produce to fresh, seasonal ingredients and homemade pub classics. He's also hired, a new chef who's specially trained in the art of pastry making and has more than 21 years' experience in the industry. The grand reopening of the new look Coach and Horses is on Good Friday, when Mr. Dobson and his partner will be opening the doors at 5 p.m. for welcome drinks and a chance to meet the team. The new menu will be on offer all day Saturday, with Hampshire roast lamb being served up across Easter Sunday and Monday. A Bansi castle will also be in place throughout the weekend. And there's a lovely picture of the new sign going up and of David and Brenda smiling, looking very happy about their project.
New use for Dingham's shop. The former site of Dingham's cookshop looks set to be turned into a deli and wine bar. The building has been taken over by the owners of General Store and the new pump house, Alec Donnan and Laura Turner. On a poster attached to the building, it says that the Autumn House in the square will be contemporary food and retail experience. It is directly opposite the owner's General Store, which sells groceries, provisions, wine, cheese and charcuterie. They have also recently opened the Pump House, which is an exclusive members-only venue. According to its website, it offers co-working and well-being space with open-plan workspaces, private meeting rooms, Zoom pods and coffee lounge, a gym, yoga studio and classes, recording studio, screen room and weekly members-only events. The poster outside says that Autumn House customers will be able to enjoy fresh delicatessen food and dine at the bar with a glass of wine. Also, our in-house coffee expert can make you a coffee to have in or take away and show you around our selection of specialty coffee machines to have at home. It mentions how it will continue to sell cookware products. To keep the spirit of Dingham's alive, you can shop a carefully curated selection of home and cookwares. Dingham's cookshop closed in January after owners could no longer afford to pay the rent. Mr. Donnan said, "We hope that we can build in the superb reputation that the square has already built over the years and create a real hive of activity that will hopefully benefit all of the wonderful retailers in the street. We hope Our hope is that it will generate around 10 to 15 local jobs for local people. It's our belief that we'll be open this May.
Garden Fair returning after a two-year absence. Bishop's Waltham Garden Fair, this is. After an enforced absence of 2 years due to government COVID restrictions, the committee of Bishop's Waltham Garden Fair are busy planning a return on May the 1st. Held in the grounds of Winters Hill Hall, Durley, this year's fair will have something for everyone, with lots of new stall holders as well as regulars, selling a wide range of products from candles to garden tools. Falcon High doing a birds of prey flying display, Andy McKindo giving gardening advice, and some alpacas on site. This is a fair for the whole family to enjoy. There will be a minibus running from St George's Square, Bishop's Waltham, hourly, from 9:30 a.m. for those requiring transport. The event takes place from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., I should say, with tickets £5 or £4.50 in advance by booking on www.bishopswalthamgardenfairorganisation. Children under 14 go free.
Booster vaccines. Residents in and around Winchester who are eligible for COVID-19 vaccine in the spring booster rollout can now get one at a pop-up vaccination site. Pharmacy to you, and spelled number two to you or whatever, an online pharmacy is supporting the NHS by offering those eligible a COVID-19 spring booster jab, the chance to get one at Winchester Park and Ride South Car Park. These vaccines are available to people aged 75 years and over, care home residents, and anyone aged 12 years or older who have a weakened immune system. This additional dose should be administered at around 6 months since the previous vaccine dose to ensure maximum protection. Janisha Patel, clinical lead at the Winchester Pharmacy 2U vaccination site, said it is really vital because the lockdown has been eased and quite a lot of restrictions have been lifted. It's important to keep each other safe, and if COVID admissions are increasing, then it is even more vital to get your spring booster while it is being offered. Staff and volunteers have delivered over 118 million vaccinations across England, including 32 million boosters, since the rollout in September 2021. Sarah Dunford from Monkwood, who received her spring booster on Thursday in Winchester, said, "I'm actually quite relieved because I'm immune suppressed and did actually catch COVID in February. I'm pretty convinced it would have been worse if it had not been for the vaccinations, so it's just good to get boosted. Any level of protection I can get, I'm up for." To book, go to pharmacy2u.co.uk, and that's pharmacy with the number two and a small u, then the .co.uk.
Teenager beats top 100 player. Oliver Sykes may be restricting his practice time while preparing for his GCSEs, but his result on the snooker table have certainly gone up a grade. The 16-year-old from Charnas Ford has hit a rich vein of form recently, and it was evident during the sixth leg of the Q Stars Under 21 Gold Tour in Bournemouth. Sykes, who earlier in the day recorded his first Q Stars century break, pocketed £100 in prize money after beating the world champion 99, Jamie Wilson, 3-0 in the final at the Green Bay Snooker Club. As a professional, Wilson, was conceding a 14-point handicap start to all his opponents. Sykes recorded his 28th competitive ton of a competitive ton of 108 against last season's Silver Tour ranking champion Riley Ellis, North Wilts, in a group stages. The previous day, the English Under-21 Championship finalists made 124 in the Open Series at Chandler's Ford Snooker Club. Sykes, who lost only one frame out of 16, was particularly pleased to have been scoring more heavily on his travels. He made an 81 break in the final, as well as the efforts of 84, 79 and 59 in the group stages. He said, "I haven't been able to practice much recently, so I'm happy to be scoring well. I'm not known for making many tons in tournaments away from home." Reflecting on the day, the talented left-hander added, "I'm pretty happy with myself, competing with Jamie and Connor," Benzie, "two tough opponents." Benzie, of Eastleigh, finished third in the round-robin group and is now just 3 points behind ranking leader Ollie Burfitt Payne of Wales. With two tournaments remaining, Sykes is fifth behind Wilson, and English Under-14 Championship finalist O'Shea Scott of Eastleigh. Chandler's Ford Snooker Club hosts the seventh leg of the eighth on the 8th Sunday in April 24th.
Supermarket petrol shortages. Drivers were left frustrated as two Winchester petrol stations ran out of fuel last week. Motorists in need of a refill had to divert at both Sainsbury's in Badger Farm Road and Tesco in Eastern Way after the supermarket pumps ran dry. Both supermarkets have said they are having constant deliveries and cannot provide detailed information on delivery times. This comes as climate campaigners continue to block oil terminals across the country. Arrests were made at protests across Hampshire last week after activists chose to act outside the law. This included the BP refinery in Hamble and the Esso terminal in Hythe. Officers attended the protest in Hamble Lane and Copse Lane and the protest in Hythe, where four arrests were made in total. In Hamble Lane, a 20-year-old man from Bath and a 17-year-old from Moray in Scotland were arrested on suspicion of aggravated trespass and failing to comply with conditions. Meanwhile, a 52-year-old woman from Farnborough and a 57-year-old man from Brighton were arrested on suspicion of aggravated trespass at the Hythe terminal. All have been released on conditional police bail while inquiries continue. The Chronicle has approached both Tesco and Sainsbury's for clarification on what caused the shortage.
Packham made charity patron. Chris Packham, the BBC TV presenter and naturalist, has agreed to become the patron of Winchester Youth Counselling, WYC, the charity providing mental health counselling and support for young people. WYC supports young people struggling with complex mental health challenges, including anxiety, depression, self-harm and suicidal thoughts. CEO Erin McMurtry said, "With long waiting times for NHS mental health services, WYC counselling is in increased demand. We are doubling our free counselling and support provision in 2022 to support young people as quickly as we can." Chris is no stranger to the mental health challenges posed to young people. His July 2021 BBC One programme, Chris Packham, The Walk That Made Me, saw him walking the Itchen Navigation, reminiscing about his childhood and offering a personal account of his own mental health difficulties as a young man. Chris said, "I'm very happy to become WYC's patron and hope that I can raise the charity's profile and draw more public support for this critical service for young local people." Shan Searles, WYC trustee, said, "We are absolutely thrilled that Chris Packham has agreed to be our patron. What better personality than Chris, who has lived through his own mental health issues, to be the figurehead of WYC? Chris's passion for wildlife and conservation will complement the growth of WYC's nature therapy and walk and talk programmes planned for the coming year. We would like to thank Chris for agreeing to become our patron," said Erin. "We are incredibly grateful and so hopeful that we can achieve so much more with his support. Chris will be formally welcomed as WYC patron at an event later this year, and as a picture of them all smiling together, Chris and Shan and Erin McMurtry.
Man with size 16 feet gets thrifty. A builder with size 16 feet had a lucky find after his mum stumbled across his perfect footwear for sale in a charity shop. Naomi House and Jack's Place charity shop in Winchester sold the shoes to Jamie Coucher of Selborne Drive, Eastleigh, who is 7'4" tall. Nikki Simmons, manager of the shop in St George's Street, said they'd had the pristine trainers donated as part of a batch from the returns company. She said he obviously finds it difficult to buy shoes. A returns company donated lots of shoes to us and they're all brand new. They're amazing. Nike made a size 16 shoe and I'm sure many others do made to measure. Jamie's mum shops in here and she saw the shoes and told him about them, so he phoned up to see if they were still here. He was delighted because he never sees size 16 shoes anywhere in a bargain. Jamie, who bought the pair for £40, said, "My mum lives in Winchester and she let me know about the trainers because I collect trainers. I collected them in different sizes up to size 17. I take between a 15 and a 17. I have roughly 10 pairs in my collection." The 33-year-old was pleased with his latest find, which he said were pretty rare. He said, "The new pair are basketball trainers, so they are pretty rare I do find getting shoes in my size quite difficult. Normally they cost £160. They're very comfortable." Jamie, who works as a builder, popped into the charity shop to collect his purchase last week and posed for a picture with the manager to mark the unusual match and to help promote the charity. The shop raises money to provide high-quality care services to children, young adults and their families through the Innovation Partnership Working, Good Governance and Leadership to ensure their sustainability for the future. It offers vital respite support, giving families the chance to recharge their batteries and regroup. And there is a lovely picture of Nikki Simons and Jamie Coucher and Carrie Norris, and he towers over the two women. And my word, those do look super, super trainers.
Residents from both Sutton Scotney and Mitchell-Deva are gearing up to take part in an event which celebrates an historic walkway which runs through the northeast of Winchester. The Watercress Way Dawn to Dusk Day is an annual event run by the charity, which was created to open up and maintain a 27-mile waymarked circular route for walkers, using sections of two old railways and existing rights of way between Alresford, Kingsworthy and Sutton Scotney. This year, the event is being held on April the 24th and includes a dawn chorus, nature walk, heritage walk and meet the trustees event, as well as the opportunities to get out on the route. A spokesperson for the charity said, "Dawn to Dusk Day is our key event of the year, starting with a dawn chorus walk and including events around the route throughout the day. For the Railway Heritage Walk at Kingsworthy, meet at 10 a.m. on Burnett Lane, where we'll be joined by railway historian Chris Cornell. We will explore the new paths at Topfield and then walk up the railway cutting from Woodham's Farm Lane. Most of the route is suitable for all ages. A diversion is available for the small section, which is rough ground for those that need it. The walk will take a maximum of 1 hour. All of the events are free, although the charity has said donations are welcomed. You can find out more about the charity here, the Watercress Way Organisation UK.
Drink spiking not tolerated. Three incidents of drink spiking in Winchester have been reported to police since the start of the year, the Chronicle can reveal. Officers say the incidents are unconfirmed, but insisted they are working with venues across the city nonetheless to make sure they are spike aware. This comes after a recent flurry of reported cases on social media through a page believed to be run by students at the University of Winchester. The Chronicle spoke to one 19-year-old student who said he had been hospitalised after having his drink spiked during a night out in February. He was found by his friends semi-conscious outside Domino's in Upper Brook Street shortly after midnight and taken to hospital, where he says tests showed either ketamine or rohypnol in his system. Describing the ordeal, the student who wished to remain anonymous said, "I have no memory between midnight and 6 a.m. when I woke up in A&E. I was found by my friends, slumped against a wall, being sick, sweating profusely, frothing from the mouth, my nose bleeding, and dropping in and out of consciousness. I'm 6'4" and very athletic, so God forbid what would have happened to a girl who may have been a lot smaller too. It's awful." The student said he decided not to report the incident to police, as he wasn't sure whether much could be done about it. Last week, venues and authorities across Winchester insisted that they are working closely to protect partygoers from drink spiking in the city. Echoing that message, Inspector John Stribley from Winchester's neighbourhood team said, "Drink spiking is a serious offence, and we have been working with venues in the city to ensure they are spike aware and measures are in place to safeguard customers. Since January 1st, 2022, we have received 3 unconfirmed reports of drink spiking in Winchester. Drink spiking is carried out to make a person vulnerable to a more serious offence, which is why vulnerability training is the key. We want to be absolutely clear that drink spiking will not be tolerated in Winchester."
Staff selected for England. St Swithin's headmistress Jane Gandy and head of tennis Paul Boyd-Leslie have both been selected to represent England in the age group Masters running team. They qualified following their performance at the 26.2 Valentine's 10K race in Chessington, where Jane Gandy won the women's V50 category in a time of 39.26. Paul Lloyd Boyd-Leslie was third in the men's V50 running at 35.26. They will go on to represent England against Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland in September in the Great Britain 10K. Jane Gandy said, "Neither Paul nor I were champion athletes when we were younger, so we hope that this relatively late success shows that it's always possible to improve. We both love our sport and the energy that it gives us, so that we hope that seeing us out running around the school and the streets of Winchester will encourage everyone at St Swithin's to find a form of exercise that they enjoy." And there is a picture of the two of them in their England t-shirts, and they're standing in a park with a row of lovely daffodils behind them, smiling away happily. And they do look very fit.
Petrolhead John takes Jag on Cape Crusade. A classic car enthusiast from New Cheriton is taking part in one of the toughest car tours of its kind in Europe to raise funds for Macmillan Cancer Support. John Hankin is planning to race his 1951 Jaguar XK120 in the Cape to Cape Grand Classic Car Rally in April. Alongside entrants from as far afield as Germany, Canada and America, the Petrolhead hopes to raise founder Dennis Greenslade, reach his target of £1 million raised for Macmillan Cancer Support. Sharing his reasons for taking part in the event, John said, "I've been a car enthusiast since a young age and previously ran a garage in Alsford. Dennis is an old friend and I have been involved in Cape to Cape for the past 12 years. It's a brilliant event that raises a lot of money for Macmillan each year. I lost my wife to cancer and diagnosis wasn't easy, as the GP initially dismissed her concerns as a virus. I know firsthand how invaluable the support of a charity like Macmillan can be." The rally, which combines the driving of older cars with the raising of funds for Macmillan Cancer Support, is not a race to the finish, but a celebration of classic cars and the bringing together of like-minded enthusiasts. John explained, "The winner of the Cape to Cape is not the team who finishes first, but the crew that raises the most money for Macmillan Cancer Support, and we are a competitive lot. I have been in the top 5% of fundraisers for Macmillan in previous years. This year, I have local businesses raising funds for me too, including Heidi's Shoe Shop in Alsford, where my wife used to work. Over the years, Cape to Cape has become more than a rally for those who take part. It has become an opportunity to reunite with friends and share our love of all things motor racing. With nearly 40 classic cars arriving at town in one time, we can create quite a spectacle. It's wonderful because locals come out, enjoy speaking to us and get involved. We will always make time for photos and a chat. The group will set off on their two-week 2,700-mile escapade from Newquay on Saturday, April 23rd, returning via Cape Cornwall on the afternoon of May the 7th for a gala dinner and awards ceremony at the Bedruthen Hotel and Spa. Emma Wright, Senior Fundraising Manager, shared her thanks to the participants for their support. She said the first event, Cape Cornwall to Cape Roth, raised an amazing £32,000, and to date, over £900,000 has been achieved. The support from the entrants, their friends, families, and generous supporters with arranging fundraising events, coffee mornings, auctions, street collections, and donations has been nothing short of brilliant. And there's a lovely photograph here of John in his white Jaguar XK120.
Nautical fun at theatre. Sasha Reagan's all-male version of Gilbert and Sullivan's HMS Pinafore is due to sail into the Theatre Royal this month, with tickets now on sale. The burly sailors invite you to join them below deck on board a World War II battleship in this inventive reimagining of W.S. Gilbert and Arthur Sullivan's fourth collaboration and first international blockbuster, HMS Pinafore, or, quote, "The Lass That Loved a Sailor," unquote. The comic operetta deals with the age-old conundrum of love between social classes, where the captain's daughter, Josephine, is caught between the devil and the deep blue sea when she falls for lower-class sailor Rafe, or Ralph, Rackstraw. But the captain wishes for her to marry the upstanding Sir Joseph Porter, the first Lord of the Admiralty. Will Josephine follow her heart or honour her father's wish? The show will run from the Theatre Royal, where they will dock on Thursday, April the 21st, until Wednesday, April the 27th. That's Thursday, April 21st, to Wednesday, April 27th. And there's a wonderful photograph of all the all-male cast in their shorts and handbags and scarves. And anyway, it looks really fun.
Austin fan Camilla tours authors Chawton home. Excuse me. The Duchess of Cornwall was left disappointed when a tour of Jane Austen's former home featured Mr. Darcy's famous shirt, but no Colin Firth. Firth's brooding depiction of the aloof romantic hero in the 1995 BBC adaptation of Pride and Prejudice inspired a new generation of Austen readers. The Duchess, an avid Austen reader, was taken on a tour of the author's former home in the village of Chawton near Winchester in Hampshire on Wednesday, and was shown clothing from recent television and film adaptations of the 19th century author's work, including Mr. Darcy's shirt. "But he's not in it. That's a bit sad," Camilla joked after being shown the shirt by Lizzie Dunford, director of Jane Austen House, who replied, "I know, that's sad, and it's not quite as damp as it was." And the Duchess quipped, "You could have given it a good spray." Austen lived in the house from 1900 until the year of her death in 1800 until the year of her death, 1817, with her mother and sister, both called Cassandra, and friend Martha Lloyd. During this settled period of her life, she wrote, revised and published her 6 celebrated novels. Speaking about Mr. Darcy's shirt, Miss Dunford told Camilla, "It is a wonderful artefact. One of the reasons we wanted to show it was that the 1995 production was so transformative for people loving Pride and Prejudice. The scene we all watched, everyone, and this production brought so many people to Jane Austen, which is why it's quite a significant artefact." The Duchess began her tour of the house in the drawing room, where she was shown the first edition of Pride and Prejudice, published in 3 volumes. Alongside the work was a letter written by Austen, who talked about receiving a copy of her Darling Child, a reference to Pride and Prejudice. Camilla was told it is believed that the author read the book out loud in the room, and a few feet away was the dining room where she wrote at a tiny desk with a view onto the quiet country road. But in the writer's day, it was a busy thoroughfare with horses and carriages passing. Before leaving, the Duchess met key staff who run the house and Jeremy Knight, a relative of Jane Austen. She asked him, "Do you write?" And he sheepishly replied, "No," with a smile. Mr. Knight, who is the great-great-great-great-grandnephew of the 19th century writer, later joked, "I write my name occasionally." Later, Camilla visited the new Southampton Centre of Maggie's, a charity which supports cancer patients and their families. And there's a picture of the Duchess and Lizzie Dunford looking at the first edition of Pride and Prejudice. And in the background, there is a lady's costume of that date.
Dragons backing to grow caffeine venture. Winchester entrepreneur David Hillard has said how having 2 dragons behind him has given him the confidence to grow his business. Caffeine bullet creator David Hillard took on the dragons last Thursday's showcase his energy chews and strike up a deal with all 5 dragons. With the help of David's singing, knowledge, business strategy and charm, the Sparsholt businessman accepted an offer from Steve Bartlett and Peter Jones, who offered him 25% of his company in exchange for £60,000. David said, "I was pretty excited when Stephen came in because he's got quite unique experience. When I said I wanted all 5 dragons, I absolutely did, because they've all got such different skill sets and background. Social media is something that I haven't really embraced myself and not something I really enjoy. So having his experience guiding our team is really useful, because often if you haven't got the concept or approach right, no matter how hard you try, you're only going to achieve so much. So he's really going to help us ensure that we're getting the right messaging to the right people and educate people on how to use caffeine for its benefit, for its performance, and for getting more out of their life." The 43-year-old introduced the Caffeine Bullet, a chew packed with 100 milligrams of caffeine per chew, designed as an instant hit of caffeine, which David told the Dragon is proven to absorb quicker than tablets and drinks. David said, "I felt a lot more confident now that I am able to hire and spend money, because when you're in a business and you're growing and not taking a salary, every single penny that you spend, you question, is this worth it? Can I afford to spend this much? Because you never know if a rival product will come out of the market, will change. So having the dragons behind you just gives you a little more confidence, but also the freedom to start investing properly in the company and helping it to grow." David has been working on creating a product for vegans, as well as making sure that the packaging is environmentally friendly. He said, "We are in the middle of developing a product for vegans, but it's currently made out of plastic, which I hate, but we can't afford to do anything else because the quotes we've had would cost 10 times more to get packaging that's compostable, which would mean doubling the price of the product. And if we did that, people just wouldn't buy it. So hopefully with the growth that Dragon's Den help with and the raised profile, we're going to reach a size where our order quantities go up. So suddenly we are going to be able to afford to have packaging that is more sustainable. David has also been working on a product with less caffeine.
And we have two headings, anger as students marooned at start of trip to Croatia, and then students stranded at service station. A tour company has been blasted for its inhumane treatment of 50 students from the University of Winchester who were left stranded at a service station for 7 hours. Jen Howard, 20, was one of the students marooned near Folkestone after their coach caught fire en route to Croatia for their society's end-of-year tour. After being promised a backup coach by I Love Tour, that's all one word, I Love Tour, the company which organised the £400 week-long holiday, the students were later told they'd have to either fork out for flights or turn round and head home. Those who decided to go ahead with the trip had to sleep overnight in a terminal at Gatwick Airport, with no transfers organised for them once they reached Croatia. The students' ordeal started on Saturday, April the 2nd, when the coach, which was due to pick them up from Winchester at 5:30 a.m, turned up more than an hour late before setting off in the wrong direction. After making it to Kent some 5 hours later, Jen said it was quickly clear that something was amiss. She said, "We were driving along and quite a few of us started smelling something burning, so the driver pulled over to take a look and there was a lot of smoke coming out of the coach. The group, which was made up of students from the university's cheerleading and rounders teams, was immediately told to get off the coach and wait at the side of the roundabout. After around 10 minutes, they were instructed to get back on board by one of the two drivers, despite the burning, who insisted he would drive slowly. After pulling over a third time, Jen and her friends eventually reached a service station where they were told a mechanic would come for them. None of us were particularly keen on getting back on the coach at this point. We still had around 24 hours to go and we'd already missed our slot for the Eurotunnel," she said. While the students were left waiting for a mechanic, Jen says they were told by the I Love Tour reps who were travelling with them that if it couldn't be fixed, a replacement vehicle would come and collect them and take them on to Croatia, albeit considerably later than the first planned. However, after a gruelling 7 hour stalemate, they were met at the services by company bosses and told there, in fact, wasn't a second coach available for another 2 days. They were instead told they would have to get flights, initially at their own expense, and a different coach would take them to the airport, or alternatively return to Winchester some 12 hours after they departed. Jen, alongside most of the other students, reluctantly opted to stay put, as they were only offered a voucher worth £100 to help cover the flights, which she said were priced at around £300 each way. I Love Tour did provide transport back to Winchester for Jen and her friends, but again fell foul of its promise to take the 9 girls who decided to fly to Croatia to the airport, with the group having to catch a train. Since arriving in Croatia, Jen said the girls were made to sign a contract which states I Love Tour is not liable for their transport home. Jen says I Love Tour has offered the students who didn't go a full refund, but has yet to apologise, despite multiple emails to the travel company. She said, "We sat there for 7 hours and were continually promised that we'd get to Croatia, and then gradually the situation just got worse and worse, before eventually we just ended up turning around and going back home. I Love Tour was contacted for comment, but has failed to respond." And there are a couple of photographs. One is of the coach being towed away by the recovery vehicle. And then there's the picture of the coach, very big coach, I have to say, with I Go Travel written on the front, so there's a slight confusion. A big grey coach with a tiny, weeny little fire extinguisher in front of it, which obviously didn't...
Events focus mind on growing food. Excuse me. The dire events in Ukraine have filled our TV screens and our thoughts, and will probably continue to do so through the summer and beyond. That is no less the case in the farming community, Ukraine has been one of the largest grain exporters for years, and many countries that produced little or no grain relied on it. Of course, they have needed to look elsewhere, at least in the short term, and maybe for a much longer, depending on how much damage has been done, not only to this year's crops, but also to the land itself, which doesn't take kindly to shelling or artillery driving across it. If you want to see the effect of even one tank, you only have to visit Salisbury Plain, which these days sees more intensive use since many of our troops have come home from Europe. The big focus for the attention of UK farmers, apart from helping their Eastern European counterparts, is on how to make the UK more self-sufficient. A topic that should maybe also exercise the minds of our political masters. We are fortunate that only a small percentage of our gas comes from Russia via the Ukraine, but other countries with bigger reliance also have to compete with us for the resources we already utilise. One of the first big financial effects outside the sanctions has been the increased cost of energy, particularly oil, but also electricity and gas. Those who have had the sense to install solar systems or AD plants that digest plant matter and waste products to produce gas that is turned into energy will be counting their blessings, as will the owner of every wind turbine in Britain. It takes a lot of red diesel to cultivate a field, and prices for this have soared in line with the road fuel, although without much of a huge tax per litre that motorists see at the pumps. In addition, Russia and Ukraine produce a lot of the nitrogen fertilisers used to increase arable output, and these sources are no longer available. So as there's more competition for available crop, what's growing is also likely to produce a lower yield. Never have more farmers been on their knees praying for perfect weather this summer. Long-term farming policy in this country is driven by a desire to increase natural areas, whatever they might be, but risk output if land is taken out of food production. A good deal of land has already been lost as it is turned over to maize, not to eat but to feed the AD plants, which also consume vast amounts of wheat straw in some countries that would once have been animal bedding. No one knows where this year is going to take us, but previous conflicts has taught us that we need to grow more and import less. We will see this change of rural policy to require greater food production rather than less. And there is a picture of a tractor with the bales on it, and there are 28 of these huge great bales that they're carting off.
Testing questions at Home Start Quiz. Local family support charity Home Start Winchester held its first quiz night in Itchinabas since the start of the pandemic, when 16 highly competitive teams pitted their wits to come out on top at their April Fool's quiz. The charity's treasurer and quizmaster in chief, Mike Davies, was in charge once more, and he provided a testing set of questions which kept everyone entertained. He was assisted by his wife Pauline, who kept the scores, and the SWAT team, with members from Itchinabas and Alsford, were the worthy winners, with a score of 93 out of 110. A delicious ploughman's supper and fudge brownies was laid on by Joe Tyler and the events team at half time. Staging the quiz night is a real team effort, said Home Start Winchester Events Chair Chrissy Barlow.
Dedicating stone in honour of war heroes. A dedication service remembered 33 servicemen who sacrificed their lives in a tragic wartime accident. Scores of former and serving military personnel joined dignitaries, local residents, and invited guests for the dedication of a memorial stone in honour of the soldiers and aircrew who lost their lives in a Second World War exercise to prepare for D-Day. The rector of the Bridge Benefice, the Reverend Tony Forrest, led the service at the top of a hill near Warnford. Those attending were asked to recall the scene on April the 4th, 1944, as an RAF Stirling towed a Horsa glider full of soldiers from the Airborne Infantry Division as part of a nighttime training exercise. The aircraft had to fly low because of low cloud, and there was no lighting because of the blackout. The Stirling crashed into a tree to the east of Warnford Park, sadly killing all 27 soldiers on board the Stirling. The Stirling flew on with major damage and crashed near Rumsey, killing all six of the aircrew. Exactly 78 years later, the service began in drizzly rain, with music from Piper Lieutenant Colonel Ewan Stewart. Brigade Senior Chaplain, the Reverend Richard Smith, led prayers alongside the Reverend Tony Forrest. Colonel Pete Little, OBE, and Group Captain Alan Roberts read from the Bible, and Warrant Officer Paul Dockrell read a wartime diary extract that gave a flavour of how these gliders were used in the Second World War. Major General Jonathan Shaw, CBE, and Lieutenant General Sir Hugh Pike, MBE, both former paratroopers, led the Act of Remembrance, which included the Last Post, a Pipe Lament, and the Reveille. Wreaths were then laid by Flick Drummond, MP, and on behalf of the Airborne Forces, King's Own Scottish Borders, Glider Pilot Regiment, Royal Army Medical Corps, Royal Air Force, Royal Australian Air Force, and Royal British Legion. Pupils from nearby Droxford Junior School read out the names of all 33 servicemen who had died as the wreaths were laid, after which head teacher Matthew Dampier and a pupil also laid a wreath. The Reverends Tony Forrest and Richard Smith then jointly dedicated the memorial stone. Regimental prayers were prayed, the Kohima epitaph was said, and the national anthem was sung. After the dedication service, an RAF Hercules performed a flypast as a tribute to those who had given their lives in service. The event had been organised by a team led by retired paratrooper Major Will Pike, whose parents-in-law owned the farmland on which the memorial stone is now situated. He told those who attended that the current conflict in Ukraine was a reminder of the vital role of the armed forces to help preserve civilised society. This incident was mentioned by a local vicar in a remembrance service a couple of us attended in Westmeath a year or so ago. He said, "I don't think it was widely known about in the village, but we were both airborne forces, so we thought it would be fitting to set up a memorial in their memory. We often remember those killed in action in war memorials, but it's easy to forget those servicemen killed in accidents. We wanted to place the memorial stone here, next to the South Downs Way, so lots of people can see the names and the description of what happened. I hope they will think of those who have served in conflicts then and since, and the service that these people have given to our country in pursuit of the values we hold dear."
Nostalgia for book for the Jubilee. We invite our readers to join us as Hampshire celebrates the Queen's Platinum Jubilee, 70 glorious years of our Queen in words and picture. In a special limited edition, 116-page nostalgia bookazine. It may be 1,000 years before such a momentous occasion is repeated, so don't miss out and pre-order your copy now for £6.95, £4.95 plus postage and packing. To order, simply call 0800 953 0227. I'll repeat that again, 0800 953 0227. We assure you'll also be celebrating, so publicise your community events for free at Hampshire Chronicle, all one word, .co.uk, and local events, and share photos of your celebrations at hampshirechronicle.co.uk /jubilee. As we prepare to celebrate 70 glorious years of our Queen with a Platinum Jubilee, we would like to invite you and your neighbours to enter a competition to win £300 in Sainsbury's shopping vouchers to use towards purchasing food for your street party or community event. The street party or community event that receives the most entries will win the £300 voucher. So don't forget to encourage your local community to take part. Email your dedicated Platinum Jubilee reporter, toby.oliver@newsquest.co.uk, with the details so you can come along on the day.
Chance to speak on new homes. A parish council that could see 100 new homes built in its village is urging residents to speak out before it's too late. Swanmore has been asked to find space for between 90 and 100 additional homes before the new Winchester local plan is published. Excuse me. But the parish council is eager to hear from locals and will be hosting a number of public consultation sessions this week. The Winchester local plan has a huge impact on the village. If we don't have our say now, it will be too late by the time the draft plan is circulated for comment later in the year, said a spokesperson. So please do take the time to pop into one of the 6 drop-in sessions we are holding. We appreciate its short notice. However, Winchester Planning want feedback by the end of April, and if you take away these to holidays, that leaves next week. Hopefully the 6 sessions allow for time to suit most residents. The drop-in sessions will be at the Parish Council offices in New Road on April the 6th and 7th between 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. April the 8th and 9th between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. Every house in Swanmore will receive a leaflet on this in the coming days. The leaflet distributor we plan to use is no longer available on our tight schedule, added the spokesman. So 4 of us from the parish council, including the chairman, will be out and about.
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, copying and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye and happy Easter.
And John Parvin.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye. Do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.